Hey everybody, happy Tuesday at 4. This is Voices from the Frontlines, your weekly revolutionary news analysis of social movement show. I'm your host, Eric Mann. Today's going to be a pretty cool show. We're going to have Lisa Gay Hamilton, the actress, and John Sayles, the filmmaker, to talk about their film, Go For Sisters, coming out this Friday night at the New Art, which we're going to be plugging unmercifully all for the next 40 minutes. But we're happy that Lisa Gay Hamilton's now in studio so we can begin the conversation about the film. John is going to be joining us. We don't know when, since he's on a... They're all on these press trips, so they can't really control what's going on. So we got Lisa Gay Hamilton, so we're all good.
I'm glad to be here.
Okay, great. Well, having just looked at your face for about 45 minutes on screen, and I'll start with, and then, of course, I'll ask you some questions, and you'll tell me stuff. But, I mean, first of all, just seeing two black women's faces. That was pretty amazing.
How about that?
And not just sort of flitting and around the screen, but, like, even when the way it opens, there's a close-up of your face. And the two of you,
Yolanda Ross.
Thank you. So one thing I was thinking about is it's called Go For Sisters. It's at the New Art this Friday. I think it even starts at 1:20. Then there's a 4:10 show. A bunch of us are going to go at the 7 o'clock show. We have at least 20 people coming so far.
Fabulous.
For the opening and we want Voices from the Frontlines listeners to be there Friday night, Saturday night, all day Sunday, because when films first get off the ground, very hard, and you want to build up audience. So let me start with this, Lisa Gay. Well, I thought one thing that was interesting is, you know, you have Cagney and Lacey, you have Darsky and Hutch, you got all these different combos. But I don't think I ever saw a film with a black parole officer and a black parolee, two black women, as the protagonists of a film. So let's start there.
It's kind of awkward and weird, isn't it? John Sayles, a wonderful independent filmmaker, writer, director, has written a terrific, terrific film called Go For Sisters. And it is about two women who were best friends in high school, both very different, sort of an odd couple. And then they both graduate from high school and lead very different lives. And 20 years later, one character, myself, Bernice, who is a parole officer,
right,
and then Yolanda Ross's character, Fontaine, who unfortunately ends up on some hard time, is a drug addict and ends up in jail and comes out, and lo and behold, she ends up being my parolee and walks into my office. And it is the relationship between these two women 20 years later and how Bernice is on the search of her son, whom probably has been kidnapped, probably across the border, has gotten into some illegal hard times himself, and she elicits the help of Fontaine, and then they elicit the help of Detective Suarez, who is played by the great Edward James Olmos. And it's a road trip that these three characters take in search of my son.
It was great because I saw much more than a coming attraction and less than the whole film. So I'm totally hooked. I really do. I really liked it a lot. I mean, one thing I want to say is that, and I was thinking about explaining this, to me, this is what I call a small and a slow film, both of which I know the industry doesn't love, but those are my favorite films, really. I mean, I love small films. Small meaning there's people, real people, not a lot of them, but some people you get to know. And you can actually watch their mannerisms, and the camera goes in and out. You can watch little subtleties of nuance between the two characters, which I happen to really love, both in real life and in the film. And slow, we were talking about this at the Strategy Center, about why can't things slow down a little bit so your mind can get around them? Because if you notice right now, the films are trying to be so fast, and it's like the audience, as fast as it gets, they need it faster. And slow doesn't mean it's a slow film. It just means it's moving at human pace. So there's some very nice scenes. Like one scene is where you're deciding, I mean, first of all, you're telling her, well, I got to be a parole officer. But then within about a few minutes after you set up all the formalities. Now you want to bend the rules a little bit. So that's tell us about some of those dynamics.
Well, the question becomes, John sets up a wonderful dynamic. The very first scene, my character, it opens up listening to another parolee basically plead her case that, look, I know I've broken my parole, but I've been straight, I've been clean, it's just one little error, and I didn't know. And Bernice is not lenient at all. She says, well, I guess you'll have to go talk to the judge about that, which gives you the impression that she's a tough cookie.
Right.
And then the question becomes, at what length will a mother go to save her son? And at what length will a friend go to be a good friend? And in this instance, Fontaine is willing to sacrifice her own freedom, potentially, to help Bernice find her son. And you're right, Bernice, along this journey, is committing some crimes here. And what I love about John's films, as you said, you know, it's at a natural humanistic pace, that John allows his characters in his films to breathe and to just be. So there's not a lot of gratuitous sex and violence and craziness happening in John's films. If there's any craziness, it's eternally, internally. And how is that actor portraying that energy rather than the pace of the film? You're right. And so at what length will each of these women go for the other? And quite frankly, at what length would Eddie's character go to, in some ways, redeem himself? He is a detective who's been kicked off of the police force, not for committing a crime himself, but unfortunately, you know, sticking with the blue and not quite telling the truth and protecting another police officer, his best friend, and thus getting kicked off the force. So all of these characters are in search of redemption. All of these characters are in search of connection, human connection, and ultimately love.
Well, you know, it's interesting. They say that somebody said, well, I hate talking heads films. And somebody said, well, that's not really true. You just have to have some great talking heads. And it's the same thing. I think the chemistry between the two of you is terrific.
Oh, great.
So that's one thing that I think works really well is, I mean, when you're casting, you know, this is if John was here, but it's not easy. You know, people, I mean, the reason I like watching it is there's so many things I think I can see that it's not clear you can see. One, like, it's not obvious you can't cast chemistry. Or, no, I'm sorry, the opposite. You have to cast chemistry, don't you think?
Well, John says a lot of his work is about casting. It's casting the right director. Today, as you suggested, we've been doing a lot of press for the film, and I got a little teary-eyed because John said something which I didn't know, which was he wrote this part with me in mind.
Wow.
And I did not know that. And that has blown me away for the day. I'm sort of on my knees being humble about all that because I just think, wow, I had no idea. And so there's that. And Yolanda, he actually thought of Yolanda for the role that she's playing and thought of Eddie. And so I think what John tends to do is work with actors that he wants to work with. And what's wonderful about that is not only do we get to work, but often we're the actors you don't normally see a lot or aren't starring in films or are not necessarily blockbuster actors who bring in millions and millions of dollars. We're the struggling actors who have been around for a while paying our dues and continuing to pay our dues. So he gets lucky, I think, but he's also brilliant at it in terms of casting, putting us together, knowing that none of us are egomaniacs, none of us are divas,
right,
and that we are really interested in about creating this story. And all of John's films that he directs come directly out of his pocket. So this is his money, his time, his words, his direction, and we are all very respectful of that and also understand that this is about economics. We have to be very economical here. We shot this film in 19 days in two different countries, 67 scenes, and we shot it in the San Fernando Valley, in Mexicali, in Tijuana, and I'm missing another city in there somewhere. So we didn't have a lot of time to rehearse. In fact, no time to rehearse. We had no time for a discussion. And so the idea of Yolanda and I coming together, John did a brilliant scheduling idea, which was the very first scene of the movie, was the very first scene we shot.
Right.
And so Yolanda had never worked together.
Really?
Had just met the night before at a social gathering, and he said, action. And I have to say, she blew me away. I mean, once I'm looking in my partner's eyes and they're there and it's the real deal, I have to step up to my game. And so we had a wonderful time, the three of us, playing off of each other, being surprised by each other. And we're talking about very difficult shooting schedule. It's very, very hot. We're changing locations almost three times a day, if you can imagine. If anyone knows about filmmaking, that's impossible to do.
Right.
But we did it. We did it.
Well, the voice you're listening to is Lisa Gay Hamilton, one of my favorite actresses before I even knew who she was. And she's also works with Robin Kelly, one of my other best friends, neither of whom knew each other when I knew them. And you've heard her on the show before. And the last time we saw the Lisa Gay Hamilton soap opera, she's in the shopping mall looking for a job, and people are saying, "When's your next film, Dan?" And so she comes back with a much better mood now. And John Sayles says, "Well, actually, I did a whole film with you in mind." So you see,
what
coming on the show did?
Well,
by complaining?
Yes. And I should say that, real, as you have said before, it's really important that everybody comes out this first week. We are a small film, and we're in one theater here in L.A., and I promise your listeners that they will really be taken by the story and taken by the script. It's a lovely, lovely jewel, and I couldn't be more proud of being a part of it. And working with the great Edward James Olmos is just, you know, another dream come true. And everyone really, 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 really has to come out to support this film.
Well, let's talk about that more, really, 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 because, you know, Voices from the Front Lines is an organizing show. I mean, when we call it Voices from the Front Lines, what we mean is that history is made by people on the front lines who really do things. So everybody who comes on the show is saying, "I'm fighting for immigrant rights in Arizona. I need your help. I'm trying to stop an execution. I need your help. I'm a small filmmaker that's trying to fill the new art. I need your help." And what we've told our listeners, hey, folks, you're out there listening, is you can't listen to this show without the obligation to act. This is not an entertainment show. You know, we didn't come here to make you happy, although that's one of our goals. But we want to fill the theater. So let's talk concretely. Okay, the new art it's at 11272 Santa Monica. It's out right near the 405, where the 405 hits the Santa Monica Boulevard. Is it sort of right, I think, right on the edge of the end of West LA and the beginning of Santa Monica?
Yes.
The number is 310-473-8530. You can also call us at the Strategy Center, 213-387-2800, and tell us that you're coming. And leave information. We have so far 20 people coming, but this is going to make me get on the phones more and get more people. It's really important that we turn out. Now, look, it starts Friday apparently at 1:20. That is to say, there is a matinee on Friday. Then there's a 4:10. But let's really fill up the 7 o'clock. You're going to be at the 7 o'clock,
yes,
right?
Yes, there'll be a Q&A with myself and John and Edward James almost.
Now, come on, folks. I mean,
Saturday's performance at 7.
Wonderful.
As well.
All right, so the Friday night and the Saturday night, you can have Lisa Gay Hamilton, John Sayles, and Edward James almost. You should come even if it wasn't a film. And then there's a really good film. And then also, we have to make something happen beyond even showing up. Like, there is social media, there is Facebook, there is Twitter. A lot of you out there know how to make this happen. So I think the first thing is to tell people that they should come to the show. The second thing, don't live tweet. Please do not live tweet during the film. But after the film, go out, write your own review. You can send it to me at eric@voicesfromfrontlines.com, and we'll read some of them the next week, which will be fun. Then you take the review and send it to your friends. Then you email your friends and say, "Did you get my review?" Notice I'm going through great detail here, folks, because this is what an organizer does. The key is called being a massive pain in the ass. This is the key to being a good organizer, is they say, all right, get it. Go Four Sisters, Friday night at 7, I'll be there. I'll be there Saturday night at 7. So let's really fill up, let's fill up both nights for sure. And for those of us who go Friday night, let's really try to turn out people for Saturday and Sunday, okay? And if you listen to what Lisa Gay said, one more thing is that John finances this out of his own money, most of which I believe he makes by doing more commercial things in order to make money, to do films that don't make money. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, he's not out making a film intentionally not to make money.
Right. Right.
That's not his goal. But what John does do is that he writes films that he wants to see. And he writes films about humanity and the complexity that exists within living as a human being, whether you are Chinese or African American or Hispanic. John is very much a historian. John is very much, as you know, a lefty. And that's another reason to come out and support John, because his politics are right on the money, and his commitment to revolution, I think, is right on the money. And he does that through his art. And this film in particular, the fact that he has two black women of a certain age,
right.
and it's our faces. It's a wonderful story, a simple story, and yet a complex story. And knowing full well that he unfortunately may not get his money back on that. And that doesn't stop him from continuing to make, you know, amazing movies like Brother from Another Planet and Passion Fish and Amigo and Lone Star, and the list goes on and on and on.
Mate One.
Yes, oh, yes. And he doesn't stop. He doesn't stop making the film.
Well, that's the other thing. I was talking to Manuel Gimio. So we went for, like, Over Sister Latino, Lone Star, Mate One, Brother from Another Planet. One of the things that's interesting about John's work is, I hope he does come, but we'll talk about him.
You know what? You should have him call in.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because you might want to do that, actually.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to see if we can find John, okay, and see if he can call into the show. Let's go back to the issue of black women's faces. I did think the film opens up with a close-up of you, so that was cool. Given the fact that, you know, all these staggering numbers, like UCLA has more national championships than black male freshmen entering this year. So what happens to young black children who don't see any black? I mean, in terms of a film this great, how do we get this out? I mean, obviously we're going to do the new art, but I mean, I think we ought to be thinking about a lot of ways to get this film out. Have you thought about, I mean, obviously we'll focus on this weekend, but I'm already thinking other places. And why, in terms of, one more thing, in terms of a lot of our black listeners, and we're happy to say we have a lot of black listeners, if you remember when George Zimmerman was acquitted, we had just a heartbreaking show about how painful it was and how our listeners felt. Well, here's something we can do on the positive side, which is turn people out and bring your children, really, to see a film of which a Latino man and two black women are the stars of a film that's also with good politics and good values. Have you thought about, obviously, well, that's all you think about, Lisa Gay, but I mean, how do we do this issue of reconstructing the image for black children?
It takes you, Eric Mann, and your organization. I think it takes the incredible academic population that my husband represents, Robin D.G. Kelly or Kim Crenshaw or Cornel West or other intellectuals like Tavis Smiley. I mean, it really is about grassroots level.
Right.
The big budget, big money thing isn't tangible. It's hard to sustain that. It's hard to reach for that because I'm not even sure what that is. But I do think, as you're saying to your listeners, this is a way when you come to see this film or you go to see a movie like Fruitvale.
Right.
That's a way to participate. It's a way to give back to your children, to your community. Whether it's fighting for a particular curriculum in the school that your child is at, or it's taking over a local movie theater that's closing down so that you can show. I mean, it's all very creative, grassroots social justice movements that include the arts in that movement. That is the way to change the perception. I mean, if one of the reporters today was talking about, you know, this is the year of the black film, you know.
Because they have two?
I said, well, they list them, you know. There's 42, there's the Jackie Robinson story, there's The Butler, there's 12 Years a Slave. And, you know, there's a commercialism that has to perpetuate a certain something, especially when it comes to people of color. I don't care if it's a black filmmaker and a screenwriter. There's still, when there's their big budget a film, there's an obligation historically to perpetuate a certain something. When you take a film like our film or Fruitvale, that's low budget, that's quiet, that's simple, that's honest and truthful, that doesn't get a lot of press, it's up to us who are talking about it within our communities to keep it alive. I often go speechless on how do you get it out there and how do you, I mean, there's the internet and YouTube and conversations and Facebooking. There's all of this new social networking thing that I'm not really affiliated with and I need to get on, get the program. But we just have to keep the door open for young artists to tell their story, for a classic artist like John to tell his story, and just keep keeping on. You know, as Bia would say, you know, you may not be a millionaire, but you can win. And I when I sit here opposite you, I say, but you're winning, Eric. You say, we're struggling. I said, yes, but you're winning. You're having an impact on a large population of people. It may not be the millions, it may not be the, but it's an impact that's important, that's tangible. And you having us on your show, or Tavis had us on his show, I'd rather be here. Do you know what I mean? I'd rather be here than having to worry about all of that other massive, big budget stuff that isn't necessarily truthful, isn't necessarily positive, and doesn't allow me to be the kind of artist that I want to be. And working with someone like a John Sayles or a Rodrigo Garcia allows me to be the kind of artist that I want to be. I'm not going to be on the cover of the magazines necessarily. I'm not going to be at the Oscars necessarily. But that's a game that is not tangible to me and that I don't want to play a part of.
Well, one of the things that I'm hoping for, I've been doing a lot of thinking about in this period, is how to build like a permanent resistance, an organized permanent resistance, where people wake up, like we have this thing called the Fight for the Soul of the Cities right now, which is trying to more structure an alternate vision. So it's no cars, no A. It's free the U.S. 2.5 million prisoners. It's open borders and amnesty for immigrants. It's no surveillance, no political attacks on organizing, free public transportation and a free student transportation and bus pass. What we're trying to do, and no drone attacks, no U.S. drone attacks. The point I'm getting to is that I think what we've lost in this country is the perception of an organized alternative resistance that happened during the 60s. So in the 60s, when you joined the movement, the Black Panther paper sold 250,000 copies a week, each issue, just by people on the corner saying Black Panther paper, 250,000. So I have, in like the last three films we've worked on, a Long Distance Revolutionary about Mumia Abu-Jamal and Fruitvale Station, and now Gopher Sisters, we're trying to build a culture in the Strategy Center that one of our political jobs is to go to openings of important films that we're essential to. You know what I mean? Our 25 or 50 or 100 people. But I'd like our listeners, again, to be in on this conversation. I'm not simply talking about passively saying, all right, I'll go see the film. As much as could we use this show to say we can eventually fill a Friday night theater. We can fill a Saturday night theater. You know, come on, it's only 250, 400 people. In terms of fighting to win, I have a more expanded vision of what the movement could do at this point in history. So this is another example this Friday and Saturday, which is a test case for why we invest in this radio show, why we're trying to get our listeners to perceive themselves as activist listeners. And as you said, that we're invested in the success of this. Not we're showing up, but we're almost like worried that are not enough people going to come.
Well, in any social justice movement, there is always the artist.
That's right.
Be it the poet, the painter, the actor, the songwriter. We are very much a part of the movement in our own way. We each have to figure out, how am I a participant in this movement toward freedom? And what is my gift? How can I do that? For those, it's maybe being a doctor, maybe being a teacher, and for those, it's being an artist. And it is important for us to nurture our souls, to nurture our children's souls, and to keep a perspective that allows all of us to participate in every aspect, including the arts. So when there is a film that is dealing with what it is to be a black woman in the correctional system, what's it like for a black mother who's single, who's a widow, who has a son, who's a war veteran, who is lost, who gets involved in something illegal, gets kidnapped and is on the other side of the border, and body parts are getting chopped off because, you know, they're asking for money. All along in this story, there's the issue of Chinese individuals who are interested in paying a large sum of money to come through Mexico to get to the United States. I mean, these are issues that John is looking at. What is it to be a Hispanic detective in this system? What is it? So very subtly, John is talking about issues that are important to the movement historically and present day. And I think, as you suggest, we're obligated to support our artists, whoever they are. I mean, that's what's amazing about John is he really writes about everybody. The majority does not rule in John's world, let's say.
Well, staying on the film for a minute, there's a nice scene where you are a probation officer, parole officer, and you're asking Yolanda Ross, you know, well, why'd you go to this bar? Well, did you really? And she's saying, look, who are you talking about? Where am I? In my neighborhood, everything is a parole violation. Where am I supposed to go? And first she's trying to say, well, I only had sarsaparilla, and I just had root beer. But what if, God forbid, so what if you did have a drink? Or in other words, how did it reach the point where you're this close to being put back into prison?
Well, as she said, look where I live.
Right.
That's a great line. Where else can I go? It's here. How can I not go into the bar? Right. How can I not walk down the street? So there is John very subtly, very simply saying, here's the world that someone is living in, whether it's her fault or it's addiction, and it's how difficult is it to get out of the system as a person of color. My character who's in the system knows that once my son enters this system, it changes his life forever, and she's willing to risk her life, her own freedom, to protect her son. I did a film with Cuba Gooding last year called Life of a King, and it's the true story of, and forgive me, I can't remember the brother's name, who was incarcerated, came out, and ended up teaching children chess. And there was a scene in the true story is that he came to work for the principal of the school, and then he failed to tell the truth about his past. And so she finds out, and she fires him.
Wow.
And there's a scene in which my character sort of ostracizes him for that. And I said to Robin, my husband, I said, I have a real difficult time with this scene. That just doesn't seem fair. And he says, well, therein lies the problem, right? Therein lies the problem. Rather than upholding this man and saying, look at what you've done, I must support you. And I have to say, the warrior in me went back to the director and said, you know, I have a really hard time with this scene. It just doesn't, that's not helping. And he let me rewrite it.
Really?
Yes. And I said, in my rewrite, I said to Cuba's character, you inspire me. So how do we turn around, you know, for the brothers and sisters that are incarcerated for no reason, for something small, who are in prison way too long, who come out, who can't get jobs? How do we embrace our brothers and sisters and say, you know what? Here we are. I will give you the opportunity. I will give you this chance. We're obligated in our lives, however that is, and I just happen to choose it through acting, we're obligated to continue the fight for freedom in every aspect of our life, in every aspect.
The voice you're listening to is Lisa Gay Hamilton, who's in studio with us. We're all talking about the Go for Sisters film that she's a protagonist in. It's opening this Friday. We're on Tuesday, folks, so we're talking Friday at the New Art. Let's focus on the opening night, Friday at 7 o'clock, and the Saturday night at 7 o'clock. It's a terrific film already, and the more Lisa Gay is talking about it, the more I'm just really excited about getting you to go and getting us to go. 310-473-8530 is the New Art phone. 213-387-2800 is the Strategy Center phone. And Eric at voicesfromfrontlines.com is my email to just say, yeah, I'm going to be coming and I want to bring some more people. There's also a very nice scene in a 12-step program that she's in where she does her testimony that, you know, I've seen a million 12-step film testimonies. I thought that was pretty good about the role of the struggle around drugs and how she was understanding. And I mean, you know, it was not a long speech, but it was a very well-constructed one. So again, every scene I thought was really very compelling, very compelling. And I want to make sure that our folks get out here. Lisa, in the last couple of minutes, you were talking about the role of revolutionary artists. John has a long tradition. Where do you see yourself situated? If you were sort of putting yourself in your own, I could say, all the people that you respect and sort of place yourself in as role models, who would some of those be in terms of actors and actresses and artists that you are most influenced by and see yourself in the tradition of?
Of course, Bea Richards, Harry Belafonte. And now I'm not putting myself in the same category.
I knew you were going to do that. See, I knew you were going to, you didn't need to do that.
By far, I'm not. I'm just saying if I look up to
you. I said, who do you situate yourself among?
Oh, well, I wish.
Okay.
At their feet, perhaps. Paul Robeson,
yep.
Marian Anderson. But might I say our great warrior today who has paid a price is Danny Glover.
Tell us more.
He has really paid the price, I think. And I don't think our community knows at what length Danny has gone to be a vocal warrior. Even, I believe, our president said something. I think Danny criticized Obama about something publicly, and supposedly the president said, you know, Danny Glover who, right? He has...
Boy, that's a joke.
Hey.
Barack who?
Hey. He has... whether it's about bus riders union,
yeah.
Trees, clean water, Venezuela,
South Africa,
those who are incarcerated. Danny's actually at the march, walking along, walking side by side with the folks who are really in the trenches. When he can be a spokesperson, he is out there. I don't think people realize how powerful a brother Danny is. He's very committed to social justice. Very, very committed. I mean, obviously, Ruby and Ossie Dee.
Right.
I mean, you know, I could go on and on, but I would... Eve Ensler. There are a lot of warriors out there. And I'm going to do an awful transition. I was looking on my phone to try to find... Our website is goforsistersmovie.com.
GoForSistersMovie.com.
That's right. GoForSistersMovie.com.
Got it. And I think we got about a minute, so we're going to try to tell you get out of here. A couple of last things that, for those of us on Voices from the Frontlines, and we try to have more artists on, but there aren't that many fully politically conscious artists out there of a movement like mine. And I do think you and Danny Glover and Harry Belafonte in the real world today can speak with a movement mind, not an artist who's vaguely trying to figure out some social justice stuff. So thank you very much, Lisa Gay Hamilton. Thank you, John Sayles, for all the work you do. Thank you, listeners, to Voices from the Frontlines.